Shabbos Daf Nun. We are on the very bottom of Mem Tes Amud Beis. We are in the fourth parak of the Masechta. We are discussing the issues of Hatmana on Shabbos. One is, under certain circumstances, not allowed to insulate food, and under other circumstances, one is allowed to insulate food. This parak is dedicated to the topic of when is it mutter, when is it aser. The underlying principles of this parak is that when we have something which is mosif hevel, if the material that I'm using to insulate the food is something which is going to add heat, so then you cannot do hatmana with this material, neither on Shabbos nor before Shabbos. If it is a davar she'eino mosif hevel, if it is something that is not going to add heat, so then you could do hatmana with this before Shabbos, but not on Shabbos. More of that discussion to be had in tomorrow's daf. In the meantime, however, as far as where we left off, the Mishnayos were going through a basic distinction of when something is most of heaven, when something is not most of heaven, and the Mishnah just gives us a very simple listing of the materials that add heat versus the materials that only maintain the heat. One of the things that we mentioned in the Mishnah yesterday on Mem Tes Amud Aleph is that one is allowed to do insulation with Gizei Semer, with the shearings of the wool. The shearings of the wool are presumably muksa, and one is allowed to do insulation. Now, there is going to be a problem of muksa, and as we made the point already a couple of times, but let's just reinforce this point, that even though something is muksa, that doesn't mean I can't benefit from the item. It simply means that I cannot move the item. So using the shearings of wool would, on one hand, be good for insulation. On the other hand, you cannot move it on Shabbos. This presents an obvious problem, in that when you go ahead and you take your pot out of the insulation of the wool, so you're going to be moving the wool and you'll be in violation of muksa. So the Mishnah brought down two opinions, the Tanakama and the second opinion of Rabbi Eliezer. And the Mishnah taught us a machlokis in terms of what exactly to do under these circumstances. We're going to explain the machlokis better over the course of this daf. In the meantime, however, the Mishnah says that when it comes to Gizei Tzemer, ein metaltlin, so you cannot move it. And right now, just to say it simply and succinctly, so what you're going to do is that you're going to open up the lid of the pot and the wool is just going to simply move off to the side. This is what's called tiltum and atzad. That's what basically the Mishnah advocates, and we'll discuss that in more detail a little bit later on. Amar Rava. We're going to start on the bottom of Mem Tes Amud Beis with a comment of Rava. Lo shanu ala shelo taman behen. Now, this idea that the shearings of wool is muksa, that's only if I haven't used them previously. Aval taman behen. But if I use them previously, metaltan osam, so then it loses the status of muksa. And what we're going to be discussing now at length in the course of this daf is at what point in time can we remove the designation of muksa on an item. And now what Rava is proposing is that if we used it previously, if we used this particular shearings of the wool previously, so it has lost its muksa designation. Esveyahu mirabanan bar yume l'rava. So the following challenge was offered by a chacham, a tamah chacham, who is bar yume. That's an unusual expression in the Gemara. And Rashi over here describes that he's a bar yume. Osoyam balabes medrash tchila. So Rashi describes that this is his first day in the base medrash. So it is rather amazing that for the first day in the base medrash, he made it into the Gemara. But, okay, that's Rashi. Anyway, so he asked the following question. Tomnen begizei tzemer ve'im etalknosa. So let's take a look at our Mishnah together. The Mishnah says that one can do hatman begizei tzemer, but one is not allowed to move the gizei tzemer. Ketzer osa, so what do you do? No tel esakitzu ve'hein no flos. The Mishnah says is that you lift the lid up, and the shearings are just going to simply fall off. Now, what's clear from the Mishnah is that we are using these shearings for the purposes of Atmana, and they still maintain their status of Muksa. So the original way that was reported in the name of Rava, that if it was used previously for insulation, it loses the designation of Muksa, that can't possibly be, because the simple reading of the Mishnah is that even though it was used for Hatmana, it did not lose its status of Muksa. So the Gemara says, okay, clarification. Amar Rava, this is what Rava meant. Lo shanu lo shelo yachten l'hatmana. This is only true when you are not miyached for hatmana. Vayichten l'hatmana metalten osa. If we are miyached, meaning if we verbally designate that this is going to be used for insulation, so this verbal designation is enough to take the wool shearings and remove them from the status of muksa. There is a really interesting Rashi. It is a one-word Rashi. Rashi says, yichten l'hatmana, second line down, li'olam. Rashi writes that what we did is that that we designated them, that they will from this point going forward forever be assigned as my material for insulation. And once you give it this designation, once you earmark it for something that serves as utility for me, it loses the status of muksa. So this is now what Rava meant, that you need a hazmana, you need a a determination to be done before Shabbos. In my name, the Gemara quotes also Ki Asa Rav Nama Rav Yaakov Amar Rav Asi Ben Shal Amar Rebbe Lo Shenu Elo Shelo Yichten Lahatmana. This is only true when you were not Miyachid. Aval Yichten Lahatmana. But once you Miyachid them for Hatmana Matalno, so it removes its Muksa status. This so far, what we have now is, at least at this point, a clarification of Rava's point, and that is that in order for something to lose its muksa status, you need to be miyachid. You need to set it aside that it's going to have utility, and with Rashi's understanding that the designation has to be, la'olam, it has to be, this is going to be its status for the foreseeable future. That is one approach that we had. Ravina now is going to backtrack, and Ravina says, no. Let's go back to the way that Rava originally presented the halacha, which is that Rava said that once you used it, it loses its muksa status. And even though this student, this up-and-coming student, who first day he made into the base measure, asked a question, which seemed to be extraordinarily compelling. In fact, it was so compelling that we had to change our understanding of Rava. But now, in the Gemara's second approach and Ravina's approach, nope, we're going to keep Rava's original statement as it is. Ravina Amar Bishal Heftek Shanu. And as far as our Mishnah is concerned, what we're going to do is give an ukimta on the Mishnah. We're going to say that our Mishnah is specific to a very set case. And that is that our Mishnah was talking about a manufacturer. Take a look at Rashi over here. Ravina Amar, La'olam Kedakamar Rava. We're going to go with Rava's original statement. Im Taman Behem Mutter. That if you use them, they're going to be Mutter. L'taltam, the command Yachtan Lahachi Damu. And just simply by using them, that's the same as actually designating them. Meaning usage is enough. The Rava Lav Amasnisen Kai. Now when Rava made a statement, even though when originally presented, it sounded like he was modifying the Mishnah, but that's not true, says Rashi. Deimim Asisim Begizin Shal Heftek. Because Armish is talking specifically about the shearings of the Heftek. Devande Ase Lahachziram. It's the manufacturer. It's the one who's going to end up selling them. And even though right now he's temporarily using them for the purposes of Taman of insulation, but that, of course, is he's going to put it right back on the into the warehouse because he's going to end up selling them. So for the Heftek, for the manufacturer, so for him, using it is not going to be sufficient. But for the rest of us, usage is going to be sufficient in order to remove the muksa status. And the Gemara Tanyanami Hachi, the Gemara supports, we're back to the Gemara supports this pshat, that usage is enough to remove the muksa status. Giza Temeshal Heftek Hematatanoso, Vimhit Kanan Balabais Lihishtamish Behematatanosan. So the Brisa says that when it comes to these shearings that are belonging to the Heftek, again, that's the manufacturer who plans on selling it. So that Ematatanosan, even though he used it, nevertheless, it does not lose its muksa designation. However, if the Balabai set it aside for Hatman Lishtamish Bem to make any usage out of them, Metatnosam, so now it loses its muksa designation. So here we have now a Brisa that supports our new understanding of Rava. And when I say our new understanding, the way that Rava was originally presented. Tana Rava Babrachana Kamed Rav, the following was taught in front of Rav, the following Brisa was taught in front of Rav. Chariyosho Deka, Shigidron La'itim Nimachalayim Liyeshiva. Let's say we had palm branches, but they're not branches, they're really pieces of wood that we originally set aside for the furnace. And so now this is wood that was intended to be burned. Obviously, it is muksa. It's muksa because its intent is for burning. That is muksa machmas iser. And nimachalayim liyeshiva. And then we changed our mind and we said, you know what, we're going to use them for sitting. And we're going to make them as makeshift chairs. Sarach likasher. So now when something is muksa, like these blocks of wood, so what do you have to do in order to change now its status so it becomes non-muksa? And here in this brisa, we are going to have two opinions. The Tanna Kamma says, Sarach L'kasher. What you must do is you must tie it up in order so that it functions as a chair. This tying obviously is done before Shabbos. Rav Shimon Gamliel Amar in Sarach L'kasher. Rav Shimon Gamliel says, it's not, you don't have to tie it up. And presumably, according to Rav Shimon Gamliel, as long as you set aside in your mind, and let's even add, after you verbalize, that you plan on sitting on it, that would be sufficient in order to remove the muksa status. Now, after this Tana said over the Brisa in front of Rav, so he said, Halacha Rav Shimon Gamliel. The halacha is, in fact, like Rabbi Shimon Gamliel. It wasn't Rav who said this. It was the Tana who said it in front of Rav, Rabba Babrachana, who said that the halacha is like Rabbi Shimon Gamliel. And so what we have over here is that when something is set aside for muksa, as a muksa item, in order to remove the muksa status from it, what must be done? And in the brisa that we just presented, there are two opinions. One, the opinion of the Tanna Kamma is that you have to do a physical action to the item in order to move its status from a muksa to a non-muksa purpose. On the other hand, the opinion of Rav Shimon Gamliel is that as long as you articulate that you plan on using it for something else, that would be sufficient. Itmar. The Gemara now brings down a machlokas amarayim where we stand on this issue. Rav Amar Kosher. Rav is of the opinion Kosher. Rav is like the Tanakama, that you must tie it up in order to remove the muksa status. Shmuel Amar Choshev. And Shmuel is of the opinion that just a machshava, just simply mentally assigning it for something which can be used on Shabbos would be sufficient. And Rav Asi Amar Yoshev. Afa Pishlo Kosher. The Afa Pishlo Chishev. And Rav Asi is of the opinion that you just simply need to sit on the logs, even though you don't tie it up, and even though you don't have a verbal designation. As long as you use it, that would be sufficient. And so what we have over here amongst the Amoraim are three opinions. Now the Gemara is going to note that that's a little bit curious, because in the Braisa that we just quoted, there were two opinions in the Braisa, and now the Amoraim are providing three opinions. And the Gemara now is addressing this very point. Bishlam Rav Huda Amar Ketanakama. Rav is of the opinion, like the Tanakama, that you actually have to tie it up. And Shmuel is of the opinion. I lost my spot. Ushmuel Nami Huda Amar Kerev Shem and Gamliel. And Shmuel is of the opinion, like Rav Shem and Gamliel, that all you need to do is miyachid. But Ela Ravasi Damar Kaman. But of course, Ravasi, who's he going like? Who's he following? So Huda Amar Kiaitana. So the Gemara says he's following the following Brisa, meaning that you're right. So far, of the two of the Brisa that we've recorded, so obviously that only accords for the opinion of Rav and Shmuel. We have to find a Tanaitic source for that of Ravasi. The Gemara says we'll do that right now. Detanya, we have the following Brisa. Yotzim Bipakor Nuvitzipa Bizman Shit Savun. Now we have the word b'shemen, whether we're goris, we're not goris, it seems like from Rashi that we are goris. The karchem b'mishicha, lo savam b'shemen, below karchem b'mishicha, in yotzim behem. V'im yotzim behem sha'achas mi bo'o yom, afa pisha lo tzava, v'lo karchem b'mishicha, mutter latzeis b'hen. Rashi describes that what we are talking about over here is either some raw pieces of wool or linen. Pikurin Rashi describes as linen, and Sipa is some form of wool. Anyway, and the idea is that this wool or linen is going to be put on a wound. And we're looking at some sort of makeshift band-aid that's going to be put on the wool. Now, if it's designed where it's going to go on a wound, and that's what the Gemara is describing, shitzavim b'shemen, meaning that you dipped it in oil, and also it's tied with some sort of string so that it stays on the wound. So clearly now the intention is that this is going to go on the wound, and therefore it is not going to be muksa. If, on the other hand, it was not dipped in oil, it was not tied with a string, so then it cannot be used because at this point in time it's still raw materials of wool and linen, and it will have the muksa status. Over here, what do you see? That as long as I do an action, that will be sufficient. I don't have to be miyached, and we don't have to change the item itself. As long as you do an action with the item, so that would be sufficient, and this is going to support the position of Ravasi. Am Ravashi afan nami tanina. Oh, and parenthetically, before we go ahead in the Gemara, parenthetically, putting the Band-Aid on, isn't that an issue of refuah? So Rashi over here does not really address the question, but the idea over here is that Rashi does address the question over here. That's where I got the idea from. So Rashi addresses the question over here, and it's not refuah, says Rashi, because the intention of putting the bandage on over here is just simply that your clothing does not scratch the wound itself. And Rashi says, Havale kemalbush da'alma. It is like wearing an article of clothing, and therefore that is why this is not refuah, because your intention of putting the bandage over here is not for the purpose of healing, but just simply to protect it from the clothing that you're wearing. Continuing in the Gemara, Am Ravashi afanami tanina. Ravashi is now going to support this as well. Hakasha al gabe hamita lo yina anu biyado avamananem begufo. When you have straw that's on the bed, now the straw that's on the bed is muktzah. In other words, as we'll see in just a moment, it was not put there in order to serve as some sort of mattress, but it was just simply straw that was thrown onto the bed. So what you cannot do on Shabbos is you cannot move it around, you cannot manipulate it with your hands because it's muktzah. Avamananem begufo. But what you could do is you could lie down on the bed, and despite the fact that obviously your body's going to move it around, but that kind of movement on Shabbos is fine. We'll call that muksa minatzad or tiltum minatzad. That's moving in an indirect manner, and that would be fine. Aval im hayam maicha behema. Let's say, for example, the straw was something that was planned on being served for your animals. It's animal fodder. Obviously, that's not muksa. Osha hayalav kar osad demiba oyom. Or let's say you put some sort of pillow or sheet on top of it, which clearly is indicating that you are planning on using this for bedding. Minane beyado. Then it does not have the muksa status. Shma mina. So you see over here that you do not have to be miyachid. You don't have to set this aside verbally. Neither do you have to do some sort of manipulation to the item itself. As long as you act on it, you use it in a manner in which it's clearly going to be used on Shabbos, that would be sufficient, and that would support the position of Rav Asi. Where do we stand right now in terms of the Amoraim? Three opinions amongst the Amoraim. What must be done to a muksa item in order to remove it from its non-muksa, from its muksa status, making it non-muksa? We have the positions of Rav, Shmuel, and Rav Asi, and each one of them is supported by Etana. Rav is of the opinion that kosher, that you must do some sort of manipulation with the item itself. So let's say you had the logs. In order for the logs to serve as chairs on Shabbos, you must tie them up in order to make them as chairs. So you have to do something physical to change the item itself. Shmuel's of the opinion that just simple verbal designation would be fine. And then there's the opinion of Rav Asi, which is just simply usage. As long as you used it beforehand in this manner, that would be enough in order to take it away from its muksa status. Now, in terms of the original Braisa that started off on our discussion regarding the Chari Shodekel, so we had two opinions in that Braisa. We had the opinion of the Tanakama and Rabbi Shimon Gamliel. Who is the author? Who is the Tanakama? Now, generally speaking, we assume the Tanakama is just simply the majority position. But it happens to be that in this particular case, the Gemara has a Braisa that is going to teach us that it actually is one particular Tana. So Rabbi Chanina ben Akiva, so the Gemara says that the Tana here, the Tanakama, is Rabbi Chanina ben Akiva. Dechias Rav Dimi Amar Ziri Amar Rabbi Chanina Pamamachas Halach Rabbi Chanina ben Akiva Lamakam Achir. So there was an occasion where Rabbi Chanina ben Akiva went to another place, so again, we find this palm wood that was set aside for Eitzim, meaning it was planning on being burnt, which means obviously it's Muksa. And he said to his students the following: do a machshava, do a verbal designation on these blocks of wood, so that tomorrow we can make use of them. Now, I happen not to remember whether it was base mishta or base ava. Was it because they were going to have a chasna, or it was going to be a base ava, a house of mourning? Anyway, what comes out over here is as follows. Because it was a circumstance in which we knew that there were going to be people, and on top of that also it was a mitzvah, sheva brachos, or a base aval, where we knew that there was going to be a need for these chairs over there. So in this particular case, but only in this particular case, this Chanina ben Akiva was mako. And the Gemara notes exactly this point. Midakamar, Ibeis HaMishta Hava, Ibeis HaAvel Hava. So because he was wondering to himself, was it Beis HaMishta or Beis HaAvel, that means that this is not a normal scenario. Dafka, only in those cases, Beis HaAvel, Beis HaMishta, the treaty, where there people are extraordinarily busy and they don't have the time to go ahead and to tie up all these blocks of wood. Avahacha, Kesherin, Lo Kesherlo. But under normal circumstances where the person has the time to go ahead and to tie up these logs of wood in order to convert them from a muksa item to a non-muksa item, so then you need shear, then you need to actually tie it up. And so where we stand right now is that this Braisa clearly is supporting the Tanakama of the original Braisa. It just happens to be that what we gain in this Braisa is now we know who's arguing with Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel. Also, by the way, it could very well be that it also allowed us to understand that the previous Tana, remember when we originally quoted the Braisa, so the original Tana said, and the halacha falls like Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel, and that it was in of itself a little bit strange. You have a Braisa where you first have what seemingly is the Das Rabim, followed then by a Das Yachid, and then it's a little bit strange that all of a sudden we're going to follow like the Das Yachid, but based on the Gemara that we just did together, where we identified the Tanakama to be the Tana of Rabbi Chanina ben Akiva, so it makes it sound like that the Tanakama is also Das Yachid, so then it's Yachid against a Yachid. Okay, possibly. I'm not suggesting that I'm right, but possibly. Am Rav Yehuda Machnis Adam Lo Kupaso Afer V'Osa Ba'Kol Sarcho. Okay, the Gemara now is going to continue along its discussion regarding turning muksa items into non-muksa items. So we have so far discussed blocks of wood. Now, we are going to be moving on into discussion to discuss dirt. The Gemara actually is not going to be discussing rocks over here, but the Gemara is going to be discussing dirt. Now, when it comes to blocks of wood, so we had a debate amongst the Amoraim what exactly needs to be done. Either one option is to be kosher. You have to take the blocks of wood and tie them together so that they actually serve now as a chair. Another option is to be miyached, verbal designation of these items. Or the third option is just simply usage, using them in a non-muksa way, which is then going to remove them from the muksa status to non-muksa status. Again, just to clarify, obviously all this has to be done before Shabbos. Once something has a muksa status on Shabbos, it cannot be changed on Shabbos. Okay. The Gemara now is going to be discussing dirt, and as we're going to see, dirt may follow a slightly different path, a slightly different set of rules. Why? because with dirt, and the Gemara is going to spell this out, I'm just introducing it right now, because when it comes to dirt, you see, you don't have this this opportunity of manipulating, of being kosher. You can't tie up the dirt. With the blocks of wood, you can tie up together. But when it comes to dirt, and we'll talk about what exactly you're going to be making usage of the dirt, but when it comes to dirt, you can't actually make any kind of physical manipulation in the dirt itself. And so the question now will become, when it comes to dirt, are we going to basically be following the same line of reasoning? So we'll start off with the following. We are a Nun Amud Aleph, and we are right where the lines are about to get wide. Amar Rav Yehuda Machnis Adam Aleku Paso Afar Ve'Osa Bakol Sarcha. A person can bring in the earth into his house and then do whatever he wants with it. What are you doing with earth on Shabbos? So you take a look at Rashi over here. Lechasas Botsoa Verok. Rashi says that you're going to end up covering small bits of excrement with it or spit with it. Ma'ara Ha'afar Beveso La'aretz Lenot Lo Tam Lechol Sarachav. And basically, back in the day when their floors were not these majestic floors that we have, but basically the floors were basically made a composite of earth. So when you had a little bit of extra dirt around, so for any of those small messes and those small areas that just need a little covering, so you go to your earth and you go to your dirt and you just simply plop it right down on the small little messes that were made. That's the that would be the need for it. Now, Darish Marzutra Mishmei de Marzutra Rabba Vehu Shiyichei Lo Karen Zavis. Now, with one modification over here, and that is that you have to set aside a specific place where this dirt's going to go. Meaning, you just can't simply bring the dirt into the house and assume at that point in time now it attains a non-muksa status. You have to be miyachid makom. You have to designate a specific place and where it's going to go. Amar Rabbanan Kamei de Rav Papa Keman Kerev Shimon Gamliel. So now we're trying to figure out. We have this halacha that was just reported to us in the name of Rav Yehuda, and now we have to go back and try to plug it into the various braises that we had. And the Gemara assumes right now that this is going like the shita of Rav Shin Gamliel. Why? Because according to the Chachamim, you need a maisa. When it comes to the logs of wood, they needed to be tied up together. Now over here, with the dirt, in a moment we're going to discuss that you can't tie it together. But right now, let's just assume that you could. And over here, the author of this halacha, in this case Rav Yehuda, doesn't require you to do any kind of maisa. All he needs you to do is just simply bring it in and to be miyached. And the way you're being miyached is by putting it in a specific place, but you don't have to do any maisa. So Amalu Rav Papa Afilotem Rabbanan. And now Rav Papa says as follows. No, not necessarily. The halacha over here may not correlate with what we said previously. Because Ad kan lo kama Rabbanan debina maisa elamida debar avide be maisa. When does the Tanakhama say that a maisa is required? That's only if a maisa could be done. Avamida delo bar mi avda be maisa lo. So the Gemara says, but something where a maisa cannot be done, you can't do anything with the dirt. Meaning what's happening with the dirt is you just simply bring it into your house, and when, as needed, you're going to deposit it around the house. But there's nothing that you could do to actually make any kind of action with dirt, unlike the logs where you can tie them up in order to make them as chairs. But over here, there is nothing that can be done. As a result of that, this may in fact be different, and even the Chachamim may require over here, or I should say better, may waive the requirement over here of doing any particular maisa. Name it Kitanai, the Gemara suggesting now that maybe this is subject to machlokas tanaim. B'chol chafenes hakelim chutz mikli kesef bigurtikin. If you want to polish your metal on Shabbos, you could do so using any material that you want. And we're basically describing a very, very mild scrub. It's not going to be abrasive, as we'll see in just a moment. If it's abrasive, or if it really smooths it down, that's going to be an isser. But you can just do a very mild rub on any of your kalim. You can't use gurtikin, which is some sort of mineral, on clay kesef, on silver. Ha netav v'chol mutar. But if you're going to be using netav v'chol, if you're using just simply non-abrasive dirt, so that's going to be fine. V'hatanya nesav v'chol aser. Now, another braisa says that you can't use earth in order to rub your silver. And so what we have over here is a very basic machlokas amongst Tanayim, whether or not I can use earth or neser, some other type of mineral, in order to rub the silver. The Gemara right now is thinking that the issue over here is muksa. And as such, the Gemara now has one braisa that says that I can use the earth in order to rub the silver. I have another braisa that says that you can't. And the Gemara thinks that the issue is muksa over here. My love, b'ha kemifilgi. And the Gemara now is suggesting that this is, in fact, the machlokas. Marsav abin and maisa, marsav lo abin and maisa. The issue over here is as follows. When it comes to earth, so earth, in other words, both of these braisas, is going like the Tanakhama that says that you need to do a maisa. Now one braisa says that the Be'inan Maisa, that you need to do a Maisa, and by earth, obviously, you can't do a Maisa, so therefore it does not lose its designation. And the other Tana is of the opinion that Lo Be'inan Maisa, no Maisa is done, meaning in a situation like dirt where no Maisa can be done, so therefore no Maisa needs to be done. And what the Gemara now is projecting, is presenting, is this idea that whether when you're dealing with something like dirt where no Maisa can be done, would the Tana Kama therefore waive the requirement of Maisa, or still insist on a Maisa, and because no Maisa can be done, it's still going to be muksa. And ostensibly, what we just saw now in these conflicting brises is that exactly is the debate amongst these brises. The Gemara says low. No, the Gemara says not necessarily. The Kulam lo be'ina ma'isa. Everyone's of the opinion that if you can't do a ma'isa, then the requirement of a ma'isa is simply going to be waived. Velo kasha ha Rebbe Yehuda. We have in the parentheses, HaRebbe Yehuda, Rebbe Shimon, we're skipping that. HaRebbe Yehuda, Davar Sheinu Miskaven, Aser. HaRebbe Shimon, Davar Sheinu Miskaven, Mutar. So the Gemara says that the two sides of the Brisa, these two Brisas are just simply falling along the line of the Machlok between Rebbe Yehuda and Rebbe Shimon. Perhaps one of the most common debates that come up in Masechta Shabbos by Davar Sheinu Miskaven. Here I am, I'm rubbing the silver with this earth. I may be Memachik. Now Memachik means smoothing something down. Of the 39 malachas, one of the 39 malachas is memachik, when you smooth it down. Now, in the Mishnah, it is specific to the tanning process, but anytime you're taking a material and you're smoothing it, you're finishing it, so that is the malacha of memachik. Over here, the earth may create michuk. It may smooth it down. And so this is, but that's not your intention. Your intention is just simply to clean it. And so this is what's called a davar she'eino miskaven. That wasn't my intention. And now a davar she'eino miskaven, the Gemara says that the Brisa that says that it's aser, that's subscribing to Rabbi Yehuda, who holds davar she'eino miskaven is aser. The Brisa that says that it's mutter, that's subscribing to Rabbi Shimon, who says that a davar she'eino miskaven is mutter. So the Gemara says, b'mayu kimta lahad d'shari k'Rabbi Shimon. So the Gemara says, oh, so you're telling me that the Brisa that says that it's mutter is going like the opinion of Rabbi Shimon. The Gemara says, but I'll tell you what, that is going to be inconsistent, Ema Seifa, based on the second half of that Brisa, which the Gemara introduces us to right now. Sa'aro. You cannot take the Neser V'chol, you cannot take this earth or the Neser, and you cannot rub them into your hair. V'i Rabbi Shimon Mishrei Kashare. Now, if we were subscribing to the viewpoint of Rabbi Shimon, so it would be perfectly permissible. As the Gemara now quotes from the Mishnah in Nazir. Nazir chofeif umifasfeis avolosoreik. That a Nazir, what he is allowed to do is rub the earth, sand, Neser into his hair, and he can also run his fingers through his hair, but he's not allowed to comb his hair. Now, rubbing the Neser into your hair may remove the hair, but that's not his intention, and that's a Davar She'eino Miskaven. And the same thing when rubbing your fingers through the hair, it may remove the hair, but that's a Davar She'eino Miskaven, therefore it's mutter. However, taking a fine comb and running through the hair, that definitely is going to take out hair, and that's not a Davar She'eino Miskaven, it's what's called in Halacha Psik Resha. Now, granted, by the way, that this is talking about a Nazir, but as Rashi points out over here, whatever the Halacha is going to be Nazir year-round is going to be true for the rest of us on Shabbos, meaning a Nazir is not allowed to remove his hair, and we're not allowed to remove our hair on Shabbos. So you see over here that the end of the Brisa does allow a Nazir to rub it into our hair. Now the Gemara says, now wait one second. You're telling me that the author of this Brisa is Rabbi Shimon. If the author of the Brisa is Rabbi Shimon, Rabbi Shimon would say that it's mutter. And meanwhile, the end of the Brisa says that you're not allowed to rub it into your hair on Shabbos, which is not the which if the Brisa says Rabbi Shimon, so then the conclusion shouldn't be that it's also, but rather it should be mutter. Elahava ha Rabbi Yehuda. So the Gemara says that really both Brisas are Rabbi Yehuda, meaning we're going to go back and we're going to deal with the fact that one Brisa says that you're allowed to polish the silver using Neser V'chol, another Brisa says that you're not allowed to, and the Gemara now is saying that we are not going to say that either Brisa is going like Rabbi Shimon, we're going to say that both Brisas are going like Rabbi Yehuda. How could that be? We trade tonight, Aliba de Rabbi Yehuda, and the Gemara says that here, even within the sheet of Rabbi Yehuda, there's still going to be a range of positions. How could that be? Haitan Aliba de Rabbi Yehuda Savar Garir, Haitan Aliba de Rabbi Yehuda Savar Lo Garir. So the Gemara suggests as follows. Tosfos, that one Tana is of the opinion that when you're rubbing the Neser V'chol into the silver in order to shine it, so one is of the opinion that in no way is it going to create any kind of michuk whatsoever. So this isn't even a Devar Sheina Miskaven, meaning that there's not going to be any possibility whatsoever that michuk would occur, and therefore it would be okay. The other Tana is of the opinion that no, that there is a possibility of michuk, and once there's a possibility, so this now falls under the category of Devar Sheina Miskaven, the author is Rabbi Yehuda, and therefore it's going to be Aser. But my Kimtik Rabbi Yehuda, the Gemara says, okay, you just told me that the author of the Brisa is Rabbi Yehuda, Ema Seifa. The Gemara says, but we do have to look at the end of the Brisa, Vapani Yad Viragel of Mutter. One is allowed to take the Neser V'chol and rub it into his face and his hands and his feet. Now, Hama Avaseir, now the Gemara is assuming that the face has facial hair, meaning right now the Gemara is assuming that we are describing a grown man who has facial hair. So Ibai Zema Bekatan, the Gemara says, well, look, we suggest a number of things. Number one, it could be a minor who doesn't have any facial hair. Vibai Zema Bisha, we could talk about a woman. Vibai Zema Besrissa, we could be talking about somebody who simply does not have facial hair. Even as a mature adult, he does not have facial hair. Those are the various possibilities, and therefore, it could be that the author is still going to be Rav Yehuda, and he would have no problem with rubbing these types of materials into your face, because the ukimta could be that we're talking about people who simply don't have facial hair. Amar Rav Yehuda. We are continuing in the Gemara on Nun Amud Beis. We are about 10 lines from the top of the Amud. Afar Levinta Shari. The Gemara now is going to be discussing other things to be used as facial washes. So we just had a discussion regarding Neser V'chol in terms of whether they could be used as a facial wash. Again, the concern is that perhaps it's going to remove the hair. The Gemara set it up as a machlokes between Rav Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon in terms of the possibility that it would be usur or mutter. The Gemara is going to be discussing other materials. The Gemara quotes Rav Yehuda saying that Afar Levinta, that if I have the powder of bricks, shari, that would be permissible. Amar Rav Yosef, kusva diyasmin shari. Kusva diyasmin, some other type of material, translated as sesame pulp. That would be mutter. Amar Rav Afar, pilpale shari. The crushed pepper would also be permitted. Amar Rav Sheshes, barda shari. He allows for barda to be used as a facial wash. My barda, the obvious question, what is that a reference to? Amar Rav Yosef, tilsa alav, tilsa asav, tilsa sigle. So the Gemara here gives us the recipes for what barda is. It's a composite of a third of aloe, a third of hadassim, and a third of violets. Kol hecha, Amar Rav Nechemia bar Yosef, kol hecha deleka ruba ala shapidami. And Rav Nechemia bar Yosef gives his own recipe. As long as the composite of this mixture is less than half of aloe, so under those circumstances it would be mutter. Meaning, so we have just a subtle debate over here, this particular facial wash, how much aloe is it going to be where we know for sure that hair is not going to be removed? It's either up to a third or up to a half. Either way, the Gemara goes over a number of other facial wash materials that will not remove hair, and therefore will not be a problem on Shabbos to use them as facial wash. Can I crush olives on Shabbos? Now the Gemara's question over here, as Rashi is about to explain it, and we're going to see the Rashi inside, is going to be a little bit challenging because it seems like we have left the Gemara's basic discussion. The Gemara up until now was discussing, first the Gemara discussed muksa extensively and what it would take in order to remove the muksa status. And then on the bottom of Nun Amud Aleph, because of a couple of brises that dealt with using Neser V'chol as facial washes, where the Gemara originally thought that the issue was muksa, but then the Gemara transitioned to discussing using various types of abrasive cleansing agents as basically some sort of makeshift shampoo or some sort of facial wash, and the concern would be it may in fact remove hair, and the question is that if it may remove hair, is it something that I could use with? And again, this would fall along the machlokes between Rabbi Shimon and Rabbi Yehuda by Davar Sheina Miskaven, and as we just went through the Gemara, it also kind of depends on the nature of this agent in terms of its abrasiveness and its ability to remove hair. The Gemara now is asking about the crushing of olives. Now, if you look at Rashi over here, and I'm going to read the Rashi inside, Rashi says, Livso azesim, so al hasela, lemasek meriaso. So Rashi says that basically what you're doing is that you're banging these olives on a stone, and you're doing so in order to create mituk, in order to create sweetness. In other words, these particular olives are extraordinarily bitter, and by crushing them, you're going to be making them a little bit sweeter. Now, it's not perfectly clear from Rashi himself in terms of what exactly is the issue over here. Are we talking about on Shabbos? Are we not talking about on Shabbos? Now, if you look at Tosfos over here, Tosfos clearly is understanding that we're talking about on Shabbos. Now, of course, that makes sense, because otherwise, what, in fact, would be the issue altogether? And the way Tosfos understands it, in fact, Tosfos over here offers a pshat within Rashi. You could see Tosfos third, fourth, Tosfos down on the Amud Malif Soa Zesim B'Shabbos Perish B'Kuntros Lakosam Alasela Lamatek Mirusam Omi Bayele E Asu B'Shabbos Mishum Shivui Ochla V'Tikune Ochla. So, and what the Gemara now is suggesting is that, look, what you're basically doing is you're rendering something from a non-food item to a food item, and this is basically being mashva ochla. You're making food on Shabbos. Okay, and maybe falling under the category of tikkun mana, maybe some form of nolad. Not totally clear exactly what the issue is over here is. All this is the way Rashi understands it. But admittedly, the way Rashi understands it, it really is, it's not congruent with the basic discussion that we're having in the Gemara itself. So admittedly, from the way Rashi is understanding our Gemara, it's a little bit difficult to understand what exactly is this Gemara doing here in our discussion. Anyway, let's continue reading in the Gemara. So, So, Amal Liv Tsoa, let me just start again. Amal Liv Tsoa, Zaytzen B'Shabbos. So, Amalu V'chi B'chol Mihitira. So, he says to him, what do you mean? You're not even allowed to do that during the week. Now, Mak Kasavra Misham Hefzed Ochlim. Now, Rav Sheshes thought that the issue over here is that you're going to be wasting food. Now, again, according to Rashi, Hefzed Ochlim, you're going to be wasting food. What exactly are you doing over here that would be exactly wasting food? It's not perfectly clear, according to Rashi, what the Hefzed Ochlim is, but let's just leave the Gemara as it is. So that is possibly the issue over here, that it's a question of Hefzed Ochlin. So Lema Pligi de Shmuel. Now the Gemara says, now if this is right, this is going against the position of Shmuel, Damer Shmuel, and we saw the sheets of Shmuel in Brachos already. Osa Adam Kotsocha Bepas. A person can do whatever he wants with bread. And that means to say that if the bread can be used and utilized for him, for something, for some other purpose other than eating, as long as it serves him, so that would be fine. And that would not be considered a question of Hefzed Ochlin. So over here, so the Gemara wants to know, what exactly is going on over here that this would violate Hefzed Ochlin? And if you think it does, so that goes against the position of Shmuel. Amri, Paslo Me'isi. So the Gemara's answer is as follows. No, because when you make any kind of usage of bread, you are not going to make the bread something which is must, something which is disgusting. But honey, easy, but once you are crushing these olives, so any of the juice that comes out is going to be considered ma'us, it's going to be considered disgusting, and as a result of that, it's something that is going to be considered hefzed ochlin, basically a waste of the food, the waste of the olives. Perhaps the Gemara over here is talking about the wasting of the juice. Anyway, this is the way Rashi understands the Gemara over here, and admittedly, within his understanding, it is difficult exactly to ascertain what the Gemara is doing over here. We already made this point. Let's continue in the Gemara. The Gemara continues now with an assemblage of Amoraim. Aisel Kame Barda. Now, Barda was born from them. Now, we just talked about Barda as being some sort of cleansing agent that was used to wash the face. And the Gemara noted that two of these three Amoraim used it as a facial wash, and Mar Zutra did not use it as a facial wash. Amru Lei, in which he said, Lo Sever Lamar Lahada Amr of Sheshus Barda Shari. Now, we said that Barda's Mutter, and you don't subscribe to that. Amru Rav Mordechai. Now, Rav Mordechai said, Bar Mine Damar, Dafila Bechal Namilos Firlei. Leave Mar Zutra out of the discussion. Mar Zutra, as far as Shabbos is concerned, doesn't even factor into his consideration. The reason why he wouldn't use it, he wouldn't even use it during the week. And why not? Why wouldn't he use it in the week? Because he subscribes to the following brisa. Megarer Adam Gilde Tzoa V'Gilde Makash Al Besara B'Shvil Tzaro. If, let's say, a person has some sort of crust of Tzoa, now, literally, it means excrement. It's really difficult to imagine that the Gemara over here is referring to excrement. In other words, because in just a moment, we're going to talk about if he's taking it off so that he looks good, so that would be usser. It's just hard to imagine that there would be a position taken in the Gemara that you cannot take off crusted excrement off of you. Let's assume right now that the word soa in the context of the Gemara over here just simply means something which is dirty. V'gil de maka, or the crust of a wound. Now, if it's because it's causing you pain and anguish, so then one is allowed to remove it. However, in Bishvili Yafas Aser, but if you're taking it off in order to make yourself beautiful, then that would be Aser. Now, the Iser over here, so Rashi says, Mishum Liyafas Asma Aser, Mishum Lo Yubash Gefer Samasisha. Because that we know in Parshas Dvarim, the Torah says that a man is not allowed to dress like a woman. Now, it doesn't just simply mean put on women's clothing. It means basically to act in a way that is woman-like. And to tend to your appearance excessively is something which is woman-like. And so, therefore, to remove these things off of you in order so that you would look better, so that is, according to Marzutra, a violation of Lo Silbash. Now, the Inu Kaman Savrua, now, as far as the other Marim concerned, who obviously feel that this is not going to be a problem, and you could use these facial washes, so, Kiyad Tanya, they learned it, like the following Breisa, Rochei Tzad, Panavya Devaragla, B'chol Yom, B'shvil Kona, a person should wash his face, his hands, his feet, every single day, to honor Kadosh Baruch Hu, Shenemar, the Mishum Shenemar, the Pasuk says, Kol Pa'al Hashem L'maneu, that this is honoring a Kadosh Baruch Hu. Really interesting Rashi over here, where Rashi says, how are you honoring a Kadosh Baruch Hu by washing your hands and face? Rashi writes, I'm reading the Rashi inside, L'chvod Koneo, Dechsev, Ki B'Tzelem Elokim Asa. So Rashi, first of all, writes that we were created B'Tzelem Elokim. And in order to appreciate, recognize that we're creating Selam Elokim, so therefore we should be washing our face every single day. Rashi continues, Va'od da'haroe brios na'os omer bruch she'kachalo ba'olamo. And Rashi also notes that when you see somebody who's beautiful, so there's a bracha to make. So in other words, if you make yourself look good enough, and you have a nice enough appearance, and somebody else looks at you, so it'll give him the opportunity, the ability to make a bracha. And so these are the considerations, the counter considerations, that this is something that you should do and should warrant, and it is acceptable to wash your face every day. Okay, so the Gemara got on to this particular tangent because we were talking about facial washes, and so a discussion amongst the Amoraim whether or not a daily facial wash would be a violation of Lo Silbash. It would be a man giving the appearance or behaving in a manner that is more feminine, more women-like. There is a really interesting Tosos over here. Tosos, when discussing the position of removing something from your body because it's painful, Rashi says, "V'im ein lo tsar acher ela shemiz bayish leilech bo b'nei adam shari de'en lechad tsar godo mizeh." So an interesting Tosos over here, much discussed Tosos, and that Tosos writes that in terms of what falls under the category of tsar in this particular halacha, so if something is painful because it's embarrassing, meaning if you have a particular dirt on you that is going to be painful, but Tosos includes in that, and that when other people see it, you are going to be embarrassed by that, that also files under the category of tsar, and that would allow you to do so, even in the Marzutra Brisa more limited position that you can only take it off for tsar. Okay, so really interesting Tosos in terms of where we stand in terms of the psychological pain of being embarrassed. Continuing now in the Gemara, we are Nun Amud Beis. We are more than halfway down on the Amud at the two dots. We go back all the way to the Mishnah. Rebbe Elazar ben Azariah Omer Kupa Mita Al Sidah V'Notel Shemiyito. Now the Gemara over here brings down the Mishnah that we saw in yesterday's Daf on Mem Testament Aleph regarding the debate between the Tanakhama and Rebbe Elazar ben Azariah, exactly what you should do in order to remove the pot from the insulated material. And the Tanakhama just simply allows you to take it out straight out. And Rav Elazar ben Azariah says you can't do that, because if you were to do that, so what's going to happen is that obviously you're going to have a vacuum of insulation right in the center where the pot was, and all the insulation on the side is just going to simply fall in to the center. And then if you want to return the pot, what you're going to have to do is you're going to have to move it back to the side, but that's going to be direct manipulation of the muksa, and you're not allowed to do that. So, Amar Rabbi Abba, Amar Rabbi Chiya bar Ashi, so the Gemara starts off as follows. We are going to assume that if, in fact, you have a collapse of the insulation where it goes into the center, everyone, of course, is going to be in agreement that you cannot move the insulation, the muksa insulation, back, because that's direct movement of muksa, and that obviously is going to be prohibited. Tanan, the Gemara quotes our Mishnah, V'chachamim amrim notel maksir. The Chachamim allow you to take it and to put it right back. Now, Idol on his Kalkala Haguma. Now, the Gemara says, now let's say you're right, that what happened over here is that there was no collapse. So, Shabikami Rabbanan. So, if there's no collapse, and so, of course, you're going to put it right back again. I mean, where's the point of argument? Elalav afagab niskalkal haguma. So the only way to give a chiddush in the Mishnah is we have to assume that the sides collapsed into the center, and according to the chachamim, what you're allowed to do is you're allowed to move it back. Ah, that's a chiddush. The Gemara says lo, and the Gemara says no, we don't have to say that. Lo lam delo niskalkal. Let's go back to what we originally presented, and that is that there was no kilkol. It didn't fall in. It didn't collapse. And the debate over here that occurs in the Mishnah is, are the Chachamim concerned about the eventuality of it collapsing? So according to Rav Elazar ben Azariah, he's Choshesh. And that is why, according to Rav Elazar ben Azariah, you cannot pull the pot out, even if it does not collapse, because of the fear that it may collapse. That's enough of a chash in order so that the Chachamim prohibit even taking it out to begin with. That is according to the Shita of Rav Elazar ben Azariah. And Mar Savar in Choshishin. And the position of the Chachamim is that we're not Choshish, meaning that you take it out. If it doesn't collapse, you put it back in again. If it collapses, then you don't put it back in again. But in other words, but there's no Chash that would prevent you from taking it out in the first place. Amar Rav Huna. Hai Sli Kusta. The Gemara now is going to be discussing other areas of Halacha, and we'll continue until we get to the Mishnah on top of the next Amud. Darsa. Shafa v'hadr dasa sharya. If let's say you had a slikusa. Slikusa is some sort of plant. Rashi describes it. Esav shuna lamara ulahariach. It's a plant that's really nice to look at. Rashi says it smells good as well. Rashi says umamalan kad afar lach v'tochvin osol osochem nosno lifnei sarim. Rashi gives a beautiful description. It was put in front of princes and kings. Kshurotza notlo meriach bo umachzir lim kama. And what you do is that you take it from its place and you put it back. So Rashi over here says as follows. Here is what the Gemara is teaching us. Look, we are now dealing with it being situated in the earth. Now, it's not planted in the dirt because, obviously, if we're planted in the earth in the dirt, and by me removing it, I am taking it away from its roots, from the ground, from it being rooted in the ground. Obviously, that would be a malacha. We're talking about right now where it was already removed, and I'm just putting it in the dirt in order for the purposes of preservation. And so now the issue is, and this is the way Rashi understands it, is that by me putting in the earth and taking it out, I'm going to be moving the earth, and that would be a violation of muksa. How do you avoid that? So what Rav Huna is teaching us is that before Shabbos, what you're going to do is that you're going to stick it in the ground, take it out, stick it in the ground, take it out, and basically make an easy passage so that the next time you take it out on Shabbos, there's not going to be any movement of the earth. That is a story, that is the halacha as recorded by Rav Huna. Now, probably you're wondering, well, even if I did move some earth, I'm not moving it directly. That's indirect movement. Isn't that called tiltum anatzad? Please hold on to that question, because we're going to come back to that in just a moment. Amar Shmuel. Now the Gemara is going to quote Shmuel, who's going to say over a very similar halacha. Haisakina debeni orve. Let's say we're storing a knife, and it's right now between the rows of bricks. Dasa shafa v'hada dasa shari. And again, what you're going to do before Shabbos is put it in, take it out, put it in, take it out. And so now you've made a loose enough hole in the wall, so that the next time you do it on Shabbos, so you're not going to be moving any of the wall. So v'ilav, now if you don't do that, usher, so then it's going to be usher, because presumably then what's going to happen is you're going to be moving some of the brick as you're putting it into the wall, and that's going to be a violation of the movement of muksa. Marzucha v'itemer ravashia amar begordita dekani shapidami. Now it is okay to take the knife and put it into a comb of reeds, and that would be fine. There is no concern that you're going to be doing any kind of manipulation of the reeds. Now, I'm a lever Mordechai LaRava, Rav Katina to, I'm sorry, Mesa Rav Katina to Yufta. Now, when Rav Katina heard over these halachas as we just went over, so he says, that's very difficult to understand. Hatomin lefes utzonos tachas hagefen. We're going to be learning together a Mishnah. This Mishnah is in Kalayim, in the first paragraph of Kalayim, and the Mishnah over there says that if I take some sort of root vegetable, probably a turnip, or it's known, or radishes, and I put it underneath the vineyard. Now, im hayamuksa, I'm sorry, miksa salem megulim. Now, as long as some of the leaves are exposed, so eino choshesh, meaning what you're doing over here is you're just putting it in the ground for storage. It happens to be in a vineyard. Now, of course, we all know that if one were to take to take any other plant and put it in the vineyard, so they'd be in violation of kalayim. But that, of course, only is when it takes root in the ground. Over here, you put it in the ground, and this is prior to it taking root. You're just putting it in there for temporary preservation. So in doing so, you're not violating any Isser. And the Gemara says, Lomishim Kalaim, you're not violating the issue of Kalaim, because the root that you put in the ground, you're just keeping there for a day or two, and it's not going to take root. V'lomishim Shvius, and you're not in violation of Shvius, meaning this is not considered planting, and therefore it is not a violation of Shvius. V'lo mishum meiser, and you don't have to worry about meiser. The way Rashi understands it is that we know that if there's any growth on something, that growth also requires hafrashas trumas meisers. But over here, because I'm putting into the ground just for a short amount of time, and there is no plan whatsoever that it's going to grow, so therefore you don't have to worry about being mafish trumas meisers on the growth. And we need to tell him the Shabbos, and one is allowed to move it on Shabbos, meaning that you put it in the ground only for the purpose of preservation. It didn't take root, and so the next day on Shabbos you can come and you can pull it right out of the ground. Now, in this Mishnah that we just learned together, what is very clear is the following. You didn't take this radish or this turnip and you didn't put it in the ground, take it out. You didn't put it in the ground, take it out. Meaning what you did is that you just simply put it in the ground. Some of the leaves were protruding, but clearly as you're going to pull it out, so you're going to be moving earth. What do we see from here? That you're not intending on moving the earth. Furthermore, the movement of the earth is not done directly by you. It's done indirectly by you. It's only because you pulled the turnip out. This is what's called tilta manasad to yufta. So the Gemara concludes by saying, okay, so what we seem to have done now is we refuted the positions that we quoted on the bottom of the previous amud, right? The positions of Shmuel, and going back even earlier, the position of Ravuna, who say that when you're going to store something in the ground or you're storing something in the bricks, you have to make sure that there's room enough so that when you put it in and take it out, there's not going to be any movement of the earth, there's not going to be any movement of the bricks, and the Gemara in this Mishnah Kliyim has just indicated that that's not in fact the case. Rather, Tiltum and Atzad, as long as it's indirect moving of the earth, that would be perfectly fine. Ad Kan. Let us quickly recap Daf Nun in Shabbos. We started off the daf with a very basic discussion of how to remove the muksa status of an item. If something has a default status of being muksa, like the shearings of the wool that you're using for insulation, what exactly needs to be done in order to remove the status of muksa? The Gemara quoted the statement of Rava. The Gemara had two ways to understand Rava, either a maisa, or it has to be hazmana, has to be a verbal designation done before Shabbos in order to remove the muksa status. The Gemara entertained both possibilities of which one Rava exactly meant. The Gemara then quoted a Braisa regarding Chariya Shodeko. The Gemara had two positions, the Tanakam and Rishim and Gamliel, and the Amoraim. There are three opinions amongst the Amoraim what exactly is going to be necessary. According to Rav, you have to do a physical change to the item itself in order to remove it from its muksa status. According to Shmuel, a simple designation would be sufficient. And then there's the middle position, which is Ravasi, which is usage. As long as you use it before Shabbos, even though there was no verbal designation, even though there was no maisa, but just simple usage would be sufficient. And the Gemara presented brises that are going to be supportive of each of these opinions. The Gemara itself does not conclude in terms of which of these positions we follow. Tosus on the Amud Aleph has a debate amongst the Rishonim exactly which position we follow. Okay. The Gemara, while discussing dirt in terms of removing its muksa status, the Gemara on Nun Amud Aleph continued its discussion regarding how do I remove the status of muksa from earth, from dirt. Now, with dirt, you can't do a maisa with dirt. There's no physical manipulation you could do with the dirt. It's not like the logs where I could tie up the logs together. You can't do that with dirt. So by dirt now, is there going to be the similar debate between the Tanakam and Shem and Gamliel? The Gemara leaves that off as a possibility. Maybe they disagree even in this case. Maybe they don't disagree in this case. The Gemara leaves it off as an open-ended question. While we were on the discussion of using dirt for Shabbos, we also talked about using dirt as a facial wash. And can I use dirt as facial wash? Is it a concern on Shabbos that maybe if I use some kind of cleansing agent that's abrasive, it's going to remove hair? And this was also a debate in the Gemara. Seemingly the easiest way to say it is that some machlokes between Rabbi Shimon and Rabbi Yehuda, based on the principle of a davar she'ena miskaven. I'm not intending on removing the hair using this facial wash. On the other hand, some hair may be removed. This is a classic scenario, davar she'ena miskaven. Rabbi Shimon says it's mutar. Rabbi Yehuda would say it's aser. That is a simple way to say it. The Amoraim talk about various types of agents and chemical agents that could be used for facial washes, which would be fine. These Amoraim are convinced that these particular facial washes are non-abrasive and not going to remove hair. Of those different types of chemical agents, we describe Barda as being one of them. Barda is some sort of concoction, some sort of solution of aloe and hadassim and violets. And the Gemara talks about as long as it's not too much aloe, it would be fine. The Gemara then went into, according to Rashi, a slight tangent regarding the crushing of olives on Shabbos, making bitter olives sweet, and you're going to be losing some of the juice in doing so. And is that considered basically an issue of Baal Tashchis? Okay, and according to Rashi, it kind of awkwardly fits into the Gemara today. The Gemara continued its discussion regarding using facial washes. The Gemara had a really interesting discussion. Is this going to be a violation of Lo Silbash? And the Gemara leaves that off as a debate amongst the Amoraim whether or not cleaning your face on a daily basis is going to be Lo Silbash. The argument that it is Lo Silbash is because this is behaving, a man behaving like a woman. The argument to say that it's not is because, like we saw the Rashi, Rashi says that you are created B'Tzelem Elokim. When somebody sees you, he's going to be making a bracha, and so therefore it would not be a violation of Lo Silbash, a debate amongst the Amoraim. And then the Gemara concluded by explaining the machlokes between Tanakama and Rav Elazar ben Azariah in terms of removing the pot out of the insulation. Aren't we worried about the collapse? The Gemara says that's exactly the machlokes of the Chachamim making a gzera, concerned about the collapse. And then the Gemara concluded the daf regarding the issues of muksa, the question of putting a putting this particular sweet-smelling root into the dirt, putting a knife into a stack of bricks. Is there going to be an issue of I may end up moving either the earth or the bricks, and that would be a movement of muksa? And the Gemara brought down that according to Rav Huna, according to Shmuel, as long as I widen the hole big enough so that I know that the knife will go in and out without moving any of the dirt, that would be fine. The Gemara, however, concluded that that's not necessary because the Mishnah in Kalayim tells us that as long as the leaf is sticking out of the ground and I pull the root out of the ground, that would be fine. I am moving the earth. So the Mishnah in Kalayim doesn't say it, but we assume that the Sipshan, the Mishnah in Kalayim, it's tiltum and upside, and therefore it is perfectly permissible.